and welcome to the Houston Innovators Podcast. I'm Natalie Harms, editor of Innovation Map. This podcast is brought to you by Texas Citizens Bank. Through good and tough times, you need a bank that will stand by you. Texas Citizens Bank gives Houston small and medium-sized businesses the resources they need to thrive. As one customer says, a huge thank you to our friends at Texas Citizens Bank. Great customer service and down-to-earth, good people. Call 713-948-5700 to learn more today. In this episode, I'm introducing you to Fiona Mack, recently named head of JLabs at TMC. Fiona joined the incubator just a few months ago and has been focused on getting familiar with the Houston innovation ecosystem. We'll discuss what she has on her radar right now and what her early impressions of Houston have been. Fiona, thanks so much for joining me today.
Hi, Natalie. Thank you so much for inviting me. I'm really looking forward to our discussion.
Me too. I'm so excited you're here. Your new-ish role at JLabs. You started here in JLabs in Houston about 5 months ago. So tell me a little bit before we start about, you know, the baptism by fire I'm sure you've had over these past 5 months. Let's talk a little bit about your career up to JLabs. You worked at some larger medical companies. So tell me about your experience before JLabs.
Yeah. So my background is more in early stage drug discovery and development. So I have a PhD in molecular biology from the University of Pennsylvania. And at that time, I was actually working in the field of hypoxia and how that relates to early embryonic development and oncology. So during the course of my graduate career, I always wanted to focus a bit more on translational medicine. Really, how could we actually define drugs to treat diseases? So my first opportunity after my postdoc was really to try to go within the pharmaceutical industry and leverage a lot of what I had done in my PhD work. So I started off in Wyeth within the oncology division, so working in early stage drug discovery, which means we identify kind of novel targets in oncology and figure out ways and which how to drug them. My company, Wyeth, was soon acquired by Pfizer. If people know Pfizer, Pfizer does a lot of acquisitions. And I spent about 7 years there, particularly working with a lot of external collaborators to validate a lot of their novel therapeutics in which to target some of these novel targets. So I worked on antisense therapies, antibody drug conjugates, bispecific immune engaging molecules. And since most of those programs are really kind of done in conjunction with our internal R&D and our external partners, it really made me understand in order to bring innovation into large pharma, you often need to go outside of large pharma. So we have a lot of expertise in terms of development and processing and the infrastructure to really bring things to commercialization. But being able to be early, nimble, quickly pivot from one program to program was not necessarily our strong suit. But there needed to be kind of a nice alignment on the objectives of those programs in order to bring them to very good pivoting and transition points. So I enjoyed that work and worked with a lot of external innovators. But it was a little bit limiting because I was only working in the preclinical space and I wanted to know a bit more about drug development. So that kind of next phase of the R&D. So I moved on to work at Roche, also mm-hmm. in the oncology division. And there I was embedded in the external innovation group, which was part of the oncology R&D organization. And my role there was really to do a lot of the search and evaluation for programs in preclinical space and then up to phase one and phase two. So I learned a lot about how once a program is internalized within a large pharma, what are the metrics in which to bring those programs in, and really how to do clinical development, particularly in the oncology setting. Roche is, quite good at that, and certainly oncology, one of the leaders in oncology. So it really allowed us to view a lot of different modalities, to take some innovative approaches, but also having a lot of foundational support to build upon the internal pipeline, which was all quite a lovely experience. You know, they're also based in Basel, Switzerland. So kind of traveling back and forth to Switzerland was also not a hardship, I have to say, when we could do that. But I also wanted to think about what I want from the next stage of my career. Mm-hmm. So having done oncology, really understanding what it takes to bring a drug into the clinic, and understanding then from Roche how to do early clinical development, the next phase is really kind of how to do some commercialization. Really, how do you begin to value late revenue generating, late assets that could be revenue generating? So I moved on to work for a more mid-size pharma company called Ipsen, with they had a focus on rare disease and neuroscience. So this is certainly an area where there is a lot of innovation, and particularly use of gene therapies to treat these diseases that really have an unmet medical need. So there are challenges from both a target perspective and how to interrogate those, and then challenges also in the clinical space and how to design a trial from when there's very few patients that are involved, and then challenges from a commercialization aspect. How do you provide value for this? How do you really make this to be a profitable engagement to bring these much needed therapies to the market? So after there are some changes that occurred within Ipsen, such as, you know, changes in their CEO, changes in their CBO, et cetera, which really made it a lot of their strategic interests in terms of long-term goals were a little stalled. And so that kind of gave me time to reflect upon what could be potentially other opportunities in that space that get me back to things that I was interested in. So working with external innovators, kind of fostering innovation within a certain space, and then perhaps really expanding my knowledge perhaps outside of pharmaceuticals. So the opportunity to join JLABS came up. As I said, I've always liked, that's always been an aspect when you're working in external innovation, to also work with early stage startups. But oftentimes you see that they are a little too early to make these type of investments that large pharma would be in. But Johnson & Johnson had made it a very particular part of their innovation model, or their models to access innovation, was to have their own incubator space to get access to some of these early stage programs. And so it was kind of ideally aligned with what I wanted to continue to do, and kind of a passion of mine. And since Johnson & Johnson, you know, not only do they do pharmaceuticals, but they're heavily involved in medical devices and consumer health, it would certainly expand my knowledge of those groups. So I kind of jumped at the opportunity to take on this much, much broader role than simply focus in a couple of therapeutic areas, but really to these fast sectors. And then, you know, my family was certainly on board to pack up and move from Hoboken, New Jersey, down to Texas. So it all kind of aligned quite nicely to bring us here today.
Awesome. Well, it definitely sounds like you're well prepared to offer insight to all these different buckets of, you know, the industries that you've worked in to kind of help these, you know, startups that are early stage. So for listeners who don't necessarily know, can you take a second to explain like the JLABS model and what y'all are doing over there?
So we can actually take a step back and maybe think about Johnson & Johnson innovation models in general. And so there actually are probably four different pillars for how J&J tries to engage in an external environment. The first is, which is from our, what we refer to as these innovation centers. Mm-hmm. And they have four of those across like three different countries, you know, and they're meant to be in hubs where there are a lot of academic research and funding opportunities. So these ICs, and the ones that we kind of attach ourselves to, is also, they're on the West Coast, the East Coast, they're in London to support the EMA, and also in Shanghai to support the Asia Pacific. So the California one is where we're attached to, being, you know, west of the Mississippi here. And the ICs really focus on kind of early term deals. So full term, early stage deals at that specs, kind of working directly with the early innovators. The other ways in which you can engage is from, we also have a venture arm called JJDC within Johnson & Johnson. And they also do these early stage investments, and they're aligned within the strategic interests of the various sector heads. And those are usually also kind of embedded within those innovation centers themselves, along with a lot of people who have sector expertise. And then there is our JLabs organization, which is the incubator arm of this whole sphere of innovation. So you can start to begin to see how we can not only support the initiation of a concept, right? So you can bring it to fruition, but then also can supply some early stage investment. And then when it gets to a point where it is appropriate for a collaboration or a licensing deal, we can engage their ICs. We also have yet a fourth arm for which is part of the business development, the BD organization. It's really more focused on late stage deals, mergers, acquisition, mid to very large licensing deals can also be done. So they really try to run the gamut of how we can engage at multiple stages. Now, just a bit more specifically about JLA, as we said, it's an incubator, and we have 13 of these incubators around the world, and once again, US, Europe, and also within Asia. What they do is that they really are a collection of wet lab space and other shared lab space that really allows startup companies to have the infrastructure that they need to build up their company without having maybe to do too much capital investment. So we have options from just having your own workstation to your dedicated lab space, and then other kind of specialty labs. So we're very much geared towards working lab space within the life sciences industry, but you know, some of our JLabs also have very specialized equipment that can also be utilized. So for example, the JLabs here at TMC, we also have some concept labs that really allow, that are geared towards the medical device community that really helped them do 3D printing, generation of a lot of the prototypings that are useful for that particular group. But it's been in all respects, the idea is that we provide a lot of resources to the early stage startups, and not only with the actual lab space, we have operational support that really can alleviate, you know, just the day-to-day activities of running the lab. Now that's done on a much larger scale for us. We have the shared equipment that says that eliminates, you know, some of the initial capital investment that some startups would need. But in addition to that, the JLabs, once you become part of the community, there are also other resources that we think made available for you. So They've established some resource hubs that have, you know, a variety of support groups that are necessary for companies to function, such as HR, financial support. But then they also have some vendors that are in that allow you to have discounts for lab supplies and equipment. Being part of JLabs also gives you access to our investor hub. So as I said, the key to kind of getting a startup up and running is also access to capital. So we have, you know, collectively, you know, a series of, you know, VC firms that have some alliances or at least relationships with J&J. And we like to make sure that our companies that are, you know, high potential certainly get visibility to this larger VC community, in addition to being visible to our own venture capital group. And then finally, what we also like to say is a big selling point for once you join the JLabs incubator is that you also get matched with a mentor, which we refer to as a JPAL. And so that JPAL is a member or a employee of Johnson & Johnson, and we try to align the JPAL's expertise with the needs of some of the incurring company. So the idea is that, you know, not only do they provide mentorship, but they also can help you network within the J&J community to find additional resources you need to bring your program to the next pivoting point.
Wow, that's amazing. It's a fully one-stop shop kind of situation y'all have set up. So for you joining the team and now leading the team over the past 5 months in a pandemic, you know, I wonder how that transition has been and what you've been focusing on. What are your immediate goals as you've transitioned on and onboarded?
Yeah. So at this point, it's probably been around a little over 90 days since I've kind of joined joined in this role, and as you had kind of started out, you know, been kind of the line that everyone feeds me is like drinking from the fire hose, is really trying to understand the J&J organization. As we said, it is quite global in its scope, and multiple sector areas that also have to be aligned with. They do this, you know, because we really do have this belief that innovation can happen anywhere. And so we want to have access to that. So it's very good to kind of understand what the markets that you're in. And then on a more like regional level, I've been really focusing on understanding my portfolio. So really seeing what's the makeup of the portfolio and doing a general assessment of what's the needs of the portfolio. What are our strengths within the region? And what are any gaps, you know, since we haven't had a dedicated head to the JLabs organization for the past 2 years, are there any gaps in leadership that can be addressed? With that, I'm also trying to just understand a bit more of the Texas ecosystem. We know that there are a lot of, as I said, strengths here. You know, Houston is the fourth largest city within the US, you know, has a ton of prestigious academic and research institutions, particularly things like MD Anderson. But even outside of Houston, we're having the Dell Medical Center, UT Austin, their computing capabilities. There's a lot that is in the region that can help particular areas that are of strategic interest to J&J grow. So trying to understand what kind of could be some key focus areas that can align with J&J interests, and then how really to kind of cultivate those areas. And so I've been doing a lot of networking, but also trying to find out who are kind of key strategic partners. We already work very closely within the Texas Medical Center. For several reasons, you know, we're located here. You know, the TMC region is the largest medical center within the world. You know, they have over, you know, 10 million patients visits per year. Because Houston is so large, the fourth largest, it has a rapidly growing and highly diverse patient population. So it makes it an ideal place to do research and clinical development. So just understanding, you know, the strengths, but also some of the challenges that would really enable this region to continue to grow is what I've been focusing on in the past 90 plus days. So it's been a lot. It's been, I got to say, it's been a very welcoming community, not only my staff here, but a lot of people I've reached out to network with, you know, the larger institutions like BioHouston, Texas Life Science, et cetera, have all been very happy to talk with me and potentially to see how we can collaborate for future growth.
That's awesome. Well, what has been going on with JLabs at TMC? What is happening? I know I get the emails, so I know there's a new company that joined, so I see some growth there. Also a ton of events going on virtually. So what's been happening?
Yeah, so the team has been, in spite of the current pandemic, has actually been quite active. Mm-hmm. So certainly before I came on, there had to be this pivot from having a lot of this on-site programming to really how to work for that in a visual context. I think one of which things that people seem to be missing as I talk to a lot of the portfolio companies is having that more direct interaction between the JLabs companies themselves, but then also within our broader community and within representatives from the larger J&J leadership team. So over the past year, they've really pivoted to having more of these like educational meetings that are virtual, which in some ways are quite good. It means you can reach a much broader scope of people and have more interactions. Like for example, just this on the 12th, we are having a symposium with the Prostate Cancer Foundation, focusing on obviously oncology, but new innovations within that field of prostate cancer. This is an area of interest, certainly for Johnson & Johnson. And then we're certainly aligning that with other institutions that really have this from a strong scientific and foundational focus. We've done other series for medical device startups. So really trying to also educate that community on how to understand like regulatory and market access challenges, And so we're trying to align the strengths of the region with some of our programming. And it's actually been quite successful in that context. So I think what some people are missing, what I'm certainly missing, is I realized there was a chili cook-off that was canceled for this year. That, you know, we just can't seem to figure out a way to do that virtually. But hopefully these are things that we can bring back for next year. So what we would like to, you know, in lieu of people aren't able to travel, we still wanted to go back to having things that increase the visibility to our investor community. So go back to having our Meet With series, where you can meet with different investors. Our CEO roundtable discussions will start up. And then we're also potentially lobbying for something called a chat and chew, where other JLabs companies can present to JLabs companies in themselves. And that is another great way to kind of foster collaborations and kind of camaraderie amongst their groups. But so far, I think our media innovation and activation team has been quite busy during the pandemic. It's been that easy to pivot to a virtual environment, but they've made the most of it. And I think they've seen trying to keep it interactive so that not everyone is sitting in like 6-hour Zoom meetings to get some of the interesting content. Kind of vary the structures between panel discussions versus symposiums. And they said, well, think about more novel ways even next year to kind of meet that spontaneous interactions that we all kind of enjoy when we meet each other face to face.
Absolutely. I think I've observed that kind of across the board, that people's events have been elevated over the past couple months. Is, you know, we don't want that Zoom fatigue, but how do we make that, you know, interaction? And it'll be interesting to see where that goes. But I've definitely noticed that and been overwhelmed, because I'm like, oh my gosh, there's so many events, I want to go to them all. And I can't because I can just hop online. But it's crazy how many there are going on. And RIP to the chili cook-off. That would have been
next year. And of course, you can access a lot of our programming through like the J&J Innovation site and see like the whole list. And they said one at least benefit of the pandemic is that a lot of these are simply they're global, right? So anyone can access them and tune into them. And the idea is that you can also continue to build your connections using that as a format.
Well, awesome. Everyone should check that out. And like you said, there are global opportunities there. So that's really incredible. So one thing I want to talk to you about too is diversity and inclusion. You know, whether you're a health tech company, whether you're an oil and gas company, this is something everyone should be focusing on. But I wanted to know if you have observed, you know, does the health tech industry have a diversity and inclusion problem? Is there some progress that needs to happen in your experience? And what are some of your goals through your leadership at JLabs that you wish to accomplish?
Yeah, as I said, frame it as a problem versus it certainly impacts from a reacher's perspective. There's a strong effect to having sort of a lack of diversity in a lot of the metrics that we're looking at. So as you know, there's a push for a very personalized healthcare, which really is based upon your algorithms defined by the data sets. And so, but what information is being put into that data set? If it only represents, you know, a homogeneous population, it certainly can't be applied to the real world. So that is certainly being recognized like across our various sector areas, the need to be much more inclusive into what we are analyzing. So as I said, Houston in terms of its population is highly diverse, and we can speak about this both ethnically and also from an economic standpoint, and all of these can impact outcomes for healthcare. So there are certainly initiatives in which to be able to reach these different populations by going into the various hospitals within the community and seeing what data sets are available and having that multiple representation. So we can also think about, you know, obviously that in a US context, but since Johnson & Johnson is global, we also know that there are differences maybe from a genetic or epigenetic standpoint that also extend to global population. So there is certainly a directed interest in having that level of diversity fuel our innovation from early stage drug discovery to clinical development. And so, as I said, J&J has a lot of ways in which they're accessing that. They also have just recently announced another sort of quick fire challenge. They said it's in conjunction with Neutrogena. So thinking about, once again, our outside of pharma, there is this very strong consumer health initiative. So they just launched another healthcare challenge to look at probably novel treatments and novel therapies that really are addressing minority skin populations or the Black population in this particular case, because it's something that, it's just the focus of the research has not been there to really aid that population. There are some very distinctions. So they do understand from both a scientific and probably a marketing perspective, there are lots of underserved communities and that we can, being such a global organization, really begin to address. From an entrepreneur standpoint too, we certainly have been involved in some other initiatives that really try to increase the percentage of minority women, kind of underrepresented communities within the startup space. So our own JLab portfolio is maybe about 30% female-led, maybe another 30% minority-led. And in that case, and so these are things I think that we can strengthen by having just more support for that. I'm also been involved in some early stage pitch conversations from Ignite Healthcare, which I don't know if you also know Aisha McCracken, and her role is really to try to really help support, women-led healthcare initiatives and healthcare startups. So we do that there is a need to kind of bring this kind of level of diversity to our healthcare in order to serve the broader population.
Awesome. Yeah, I had Aisha on literally a couple episodes ago. So very relevant. Love what Ignite is doing. And I love seeing another female leader too in Houston. So that's amazing. So bigger picture, zooming out a little bit, what do you wish to accomplish in your tenure? What would be your big goals for JLabs at TMC?
Yeah, I think about this a lot, and my comparisons are, do we want to be another Boston? Do you want to be San Francisco? And with that comes a lot of caveats, right, into how that changes the community. But is there some way to have a balance? As I learn more about the history of the life science sector in Texas, there has been over the past 20 years this impetus to build up this critical mass of companies here to really make it a strong hub that competes with your energy sector and perhaps your engineering sector. That is a goal to really make that this really a third pillar of the economy here, but we certainly have a ways to go before that is comes to any fruition. So in the short term, as I said, kind of maybe focusing on what I hear are the challenges posed by some of our early stage startups. And one is that is, as you said, access to the capital. There needs to be funding here that allows them to stay here and to grow. And so part of it is that we're trying to figure out how do we utilize the full investor hub that's available with J&J to bring them to our companies within this space. Other things I think stem from there not being a established large pharma or commercialization entity within the area is that, there's been discussions a lot of the talent needs to be recruited from the outside. So there's not the level of expertise that they would need to fully grow a lot of their companies. And I'm thinking about what ways and how we can work at the earlier point to really educate the next generation of entrepreneurs. So we can certainly expand what we do from an advisory and mentorship perspective within J&J, but to make that sustainable, we also need to kind of build that within the community. So trying to see how we can align with some of the academic institutions within the area to do more educational models, but then perhaps something a bit more substantive with that that really helps, build the next generation of entrepreneurs. And then finally, as I said, I'm thinking, more long-term, I J&J is the J Labs now. We have about 48 companies within our portfolio. They're obviously more pharma, but about a third of them are medical devices. So I'm looking for ways in which to really, you know, very source highly innovative companies within that space. And so we have some scientific program that will be ongoing for next year to really attract that. But then more importantly, I'm thinking, how do we have some more strategic initiatives with some of these economic funders like CPRIT in the area to make this a bit more long-term and sustainable? Can we begin to build some alliances with them to where their interests of seeding companies and having them stay in Houston, but they also get placed within our J Labs, and we can once again help build them to the next stages. Kind of the same thing, can we do something with the TMC and the MD Anderson, perhaps like more placement of clinical stage, so more fully developed companies within our region. And once they're here, that can attract more companies to stay and grow within that region and start to build up that talent pool, that expertise, that VC community that would be necessary to bring this to a full-fledged life science hub. So. Mm-hmm. What we'd like to do in the Houston area.
Just a few things you've got on your plate. Just a few goals. No, that's incredible. I think all of those things would do Houston so much good to have everything you just listed really come to Houston. So speaking of Houston and kind of to wrap up, I know since you're fresh eyes to the city, I wonder what your first impressions have been on, you know, both, you know, the health tech ecosystem, but also the broader startup and innovation ecosystem in Houston and as the city in general. I'm a lifelong Houstonian, so I love knowing what people's first impressions are of my hometown.
Well, I gotta say, so we'll start with just the expectations for the hometown. You know, I've lived on the East Coast. I was grew up in Kentucky, so Louisville, Kentucky, and you know, maybe a few of you will pick up on my accent, my little drawl that still comes through occasionally. But you know, I went to school on the East Coast and have mostly lived in relatively large cities. I haven't owned a car in like 6-7 years, so just very used to having a very pedestrian lifestyle, being able to take public transportation, walk everywhere to restaurants, grocery stores, like etc. And when we first thought about coming to Houston, I just imagined just like suburban, but very spread out, and you had to drive everywhere. And so when we came here, we were really surprised at the level of outdoor space and the parks and the interconnectedness, and the city itself is all things are of interest. They're all kind of within 10, 15 minutes each other if you stay within that inner loop. And so we certainly found neighborhoods that are incredibly walkable, that have restaurants, that have parks. And so it's just felt like it's a very, you know, kind of compact city, and it's still very welcoming and has some aspects of what we like from big city life. And as soon as the pandemic is over, we can certainly partake in a bit more of the cultural offerings within the area. So really like it. I gotta say, I'm not complaining about the 70-degree, 80-degree weather here in November, especially we would have been in Boston this time this year, and there was like snow just like a week ago. So we're really loving that aspect of it. I think, as I also say, what I've also been quite struck by is just this level of community, not only from, you know, my actual neighbors that I've been meeting. You know, you can imagine, you know, I haven't known my neighbors. I had much contact with them in the city, but now we have neighbors that really reach out and introduce themselves. But also, as I said, just trying to understand the Texas ecosystem here. I've met a lot of these key innovators attached to the academic institutions, attached to CPRIT, attached to Ignite, and everyone has been able to just open their doors to have a conversation with me about what we need to kind of build up this community. In terms of the startups, the ones that I'm seeing, I think I kind of understand their needs, not certainly unexpected from this region, but there is a lot of resources here and a lot of that is kind of like intersecting, particularly within like the digital healthcare. So aligning engineers with bioscience researchers, with the computational biologists, like that work is all kind of beginning to come together and intersect to really make an impact. And I think because of this, the condensed space for all the hospitals, I'm also learning more about the implementation of how these things actually impact healthcare. So they say just while understanding, you know, from a pharmaceutical perspective how these drugs are used, but really how hospitals operate, how the OR operates, and how you can make improvements into that aspect of healthcare has also been quite eye-opening for me. So as I said, this job has been really expanding my horizons in so many ways. It's been quite enjoyable.
Yeah, absolutely. And just remember how nice the fall is in Houston when it comes summer next year. I know you probably already got a taste of it, but you know, just remember how nice fall is.
Yeah. We're preparing ourselves for like the hot, wet season. Yeah.
Yeah, it's not entirely my favorite time of year, but it's doable. Well, thank you so much for joining me on the podcast today. It was lovely getting to meet you, and I'm so excited you're here in Houston, and I'm excited to see JLabs really continue to grow and develop and keep serving Houston area startups in the way that they already do. So thanks again.
Thank you, Natalie. It's really a pleasure talking with you, and I look forward to having some additional conversations in the future.
Absolutely. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Houston Innovators Podcast. Subscribe so you never miss an episode, and follow along on innovationmap.com for all things Houston innovation.